Professor and the Fight Nerd Radio.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Danny the Upgrade Lovenstar, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Martin Cannon, you're watching the FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa 2, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York, you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is September 2nd, 2009, and we are a few days out of UFC 102 in what turned out to be a surprisingly great night of fights. Later in the show, John Anik of ESPN's MMA Live and one half of the English commentary team for Bellator Fighting Championships is going to be here, so stick around for that. Now, before we go any further, just want to shout out to my sponsors. They are CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. Without them, I cannot afford the lavish, microwavable dinners that Chef Boyardee cooks for me every night. Alright, so, this weekend from Portland, Oregon, saw Randy, the Natural Couture, and Antonio Rodrigo Minotauro Nogueira battle for three rounds in what I would say is a frontrunner for my fight of the year already. It was a pretty back-and-forth fight. It was all over the place. It wasn't a stupid slugfest or a brawl. It was very tactical and thought out, and it had everything really that MMA should have in a fight. It had hard boxing, some kickboxing, clinch fighting, wrestling, BJJ on the mats, ground and pound. It was a frenetic pace that you would not expect to see from these guys that you really haven't seen in a while from either of them. The first round was so close. The next two were still close, but with Nog doing way more damage and definitely looking to finish that fight. I mean, how many times during this fight was he almost about to submit Randy Couture, only to let go and switch up his game plan? Whatever Nogueira had during his fight with Mir, whether it was staff or knee injury or whatever else it might have been, it was gone for this fight, as he looked a lot younger than the wrinkles and scar tissue on his face would have us to believe. This is the Nogueira that wins championships and belts, and Lesnar is definitely on this hit list now to get that belt around Nogueira's waist. But can Nogueira beat Lesnar? I really don't know about that. I'm a big fan of Nogueira, as you can tell. We've seen Nog against big men before, but none that actually have skill. You can't really compare Bob Sapp or Zulu Zeno to Brock Lesnar. And that's going to be the toughest fight of Nog's career probably since Kurokop or Fedor if he is given a title shot. If anyone can submit Lesnar, it will be Nogueira. That's going to come down to how much abuse Nogueira can actually take before finding his opening, since you really don't want to be underneath Lesnar ever. So meanwhile, back to Couture and Nogueira. These guys were just landing bombs the entire fight, which was crazy to see. Every shot was aimed to kill. And somehow they both survived till the end of round three. I might have found a new favorite fight to watch. I don't know about you guys. I was so happy to see these two finally go at it, and I was really not sure what to expect with their age and their injuries piling up on them, and I was worried it would not be as good as it could have been a few years earlier, but I think they proved me and a lot of other fans very wrong, and that's definitely a good thing. I'm glad to see both these guys in top shape again. I wonder if the fact that they were both at this phase of their career where they've both taken such a beating that they were kind of on a level playing field still. Like, you know, can Nogueira or Couture still handle younger guys? I don't really know, unfortunately. But this fight was still pretty awesome. It takes nothing away from either of them. And I look forward to seeing more of Nog and Randy Couture. And in fact, despite all that stress that might have been on Randy Couture's head, such as his impending divorce with Kim, working on The Expendables with Sylvester Stallone, and being in his hometown, which, believe it or not, can be very stressful as a fighter, especially if you've been living in Vegas for the past few years and everybody in Oregon has your number and wants tickets to your show. Randy looked like he did when he fought Chuck Liddell for the first time back at UFC 43. Before the fight, it should also be noted that Captain America signed an extension to his contract that started immediately, giving him now a six-fight deal over 28 months with the UFC, which Dana White has basically said because he wants to have Randy retire in the Octagon. So I was actually right about my earlier prediction a few shows ago about signing some of these older fighters like Coleman, Tito Ortiz, Phil Baroni, Vitor Belfort, and now Randy Couture to longer deals. He's looking to have these big names from the past retire in the cage, give them some good notoriety, and also keep them away from other guys like Strikeforce, Dream, anybody else who could reach out and bring these guys over to their company. So it's a good idea if it works, and after all, I mean, Randy has retired twice now, so that's my problem. You know, will this whole clever idea of having these fighters retire in the Octagon work for Dana White? We'll see if these fighters actually take retirement seriously, as you know, really still haven't seen too many fighters actually stop fighting. The sport, again, is still only been around for like 15 years in America, 15, 16 years maybe. So we really haven't seen too many guys retire. Even Dan Severn is still fighting, so we'll see what happens with that. Meanwhile, also on UFC 102, Nate Marquardt knocked out Damian Maia with a straight right hand to the chin. And I don't know if anyone expected that finish from these two. I know I was expecting a much more tactical fight like we saw with Nogueira vs. Couture. The question now is, who is the true number one contender to that middleweight title that Anderson Silva is not letting go of anytime soon? Is it Dan Henderson, who's on a 3-fight win streak over Rich Franklin, Michael Bisping, and Rusamara Palhares? Or is it Marquardt, who has also been on a 3-fight winning streak now over Campman, Gouveia, and as of UFC 102, Damian Maia? Henderson was told that he was next by Dana White, but after this performance from Marquardt, are we bound to see a showdown between these two middleweights? I would actually pay money to see that fight, so let's make it happen. And in the meantime, let Anderson Silva smash another light heavyweight fighter to keep him fresh and exciting. I personally don't want to see Henderson fight Silva again, at least not yet, so I think Marquardt and Henderson would be a compelling fight to see, and having Silva do something else, take on another featured catchweight bout, would be great for the fans also to keep him in our eyes. Jake Rochalt turned Chris Leben to a quivering mass after choking him unconscious in the third round of what was an interesting match, for lack of a better word. It started off with Jake getting the better of Leben, and then Leben coming back in the second, but looking very tired, and then finally being submitted in the final round, going to sleep before Eva Leen could actually jump in to stop the fight. The scary part was after the fight, when Leben was just shaking and convulsing and kicking the air. Not a pretty sight to see. Word is that Leben did not even train for this fight, and it showed. Maybe it's time for Leben to get sent over to WEC for a little bit to retool his skills and see how he does there. Here's a fighter who's got a huge fan base, a lot of popularity, but he really hasn't been able to hang with the big boys in quite some time now. So why not take his popularity and send it to WEC, where he can take his fans with him and see if that helps to turn him into a bigger personality and push WEC a little bit more. Even if the WEC does eventually merge with the UFC, it's not going to happen for a while. So I think throwing Leben to the wolves in WEC and seeing how he handles himself there and what kind of marketability he has, depending if he can get himself to a weight class that would be acceptable, would be a really good idea for him at this point. Because otherwise, the UFC is just holding on to him until his contract runs out and just to keep him away from other companies most likely at this point. You know, Leben's got a lot of potential, and he's got a lot of popularity, as I said before, but what can he really do right now in the UFC aside from being a gatekeeper, maybe even being less than a gatekeeper? Gabriel Gonzaga beat Chris Tuchscherer by stoppage after a brutal low kick early in the fight to the groin that dropped Chris hard. It was a rough shot to see. I did not like watching that on TV at all. I'm impressed that the crowbar, Chris, could actually continue at all, and I wonder if he had not had his testicles placed so deep into his abdomen by that errant low kick, would he have been able to defend that high kick later on that round that brought him down and led to his demise? I'm not going to take away the win from Nepal. Can't take it away at all. It was a definite clean finish, and he looked great despite that low blow. But I hope this is not the last we've seen of Tuchscherer, since he's a great prospect who just had a bad night. And Nepal, of course, I don't know really where this places him in any title scene or not, but at least he's still active. It was a good win for him, despite the nut shot. So we'll see what they do with him now. And Quezos versus Brandon Vera, that fight kind of sucked, so I'm not even going to talk about that. Vera wins, yippee, blah, blah, blah. So overall, UFC 102 turned out to be a better show than I expected, with lots of finishes, many of which were unexpected. And there was, of course, that great war with Nogueira and Couture that went beyond the hype, and showed that these two vets still have it. UFC 103 is about 2 weeks away, and we're going to talk about that show in the coming weeks. It should be an interesting show as well. It's been tough as of late to really keep track of all these UFC shows. I couldn't even remember when UFC 103 was, or I'm not even sure when UFC 104 is. There's so much stuff coming up aside from UFC fights, and they're all just being bunched in very tightly these days. It's like worse than WWE now, and it makes it a bit confusing as well sometimes just to keep up with everything. But despite that, we will try, and hopefully the UFC will start doing maybe more free shows on Spike, or giving us some other options to see their shows so we don't have to keep shelling out $40-$50 to watch a UFC show. Other news this week, 5-round fights and non-title fights, could it happen? It is looking like a possibility. The Nevada State Athletic Commission has been discussing this as a reality, and there are many arguments for and against it. I, for one, am not for it, and neither is Dana White. MMA Junkie has quoted Dana White as saying, "I was saying last week I wish this was a 5-round fight, Nogueira and Couture. And there's been other fights, too, that I've wished were 5-round fights. But I'm a purist. Title fights are 5 rounds. When you fight for the title, it's 5 rounds. So that is straight from the horse's mouth. Dana White says no to 5 rounds, and it makes sense. Sure, we want to see marquee fights be 5 rounds, even if they're non-title, but how do you grade the importance of a fight? Since there are other matches, such as title contender matches, that could be 5 rounds, but then you have matches that might not have meaning, such as Anderson Silva versus Forrest Griffin, that could also be billed as 5-rounders. It becomes another mess, really. And it almost starts turning to boxing, where the fighters decide on a predetermined number of rounds beforehand, and becomes really another layer of negotiation and time-wasting that I don't think we need, especially considering how rapid-fire these MMA shows are coming nowadays. 3 rounds for non-title fights, 5 rounds for title fights, enough said from me. But what do you think about this? Do you think that there should be 5-round non-title fights in mixed martial arts? Or don't you? Whatever your answer is, send it over to me at thefightnerd@gmail.com, and I could read your response on the air. So what are you waiting for? Again, that email is thefightnerd@gmail.com, and let me know what you think about 5-round non-title fights in mixed martial arts. Meanwhile, over in Strikeforce, their heavyweight title is currently in jeopardy of collecting more dust than it already has. Alistair Overeem, their current heavyweight champion, has now signed up to take part in an upcoming K-1 show in Seoul, Korea, on September 26th, where he's going to take on Peter Aerts. I guess his hand is totally healed up since he was unable to fight about 2 weeks ago at the Corona vs. Cyborg show, but a month later, suddenly he's all healed and ready to fight one of the best K-1 legends. Overeem won his Strikeforce heavyweight title back in November of 07, and has yet to defend it once since winning it. In the almost 2 years since he's had this title, he's fought 3 MMA fights in Dream, and 1 back home in the Netherlands, in fact, where he submitted Gary Goodridge. And that was back in November, I believe. And he's also had 2 fights in K1, knocking out Badar Hari on last year's New Year's Eve show, and losing a decision to Remy Bonjansky back in March. So what's been stopping him from defending his title with Strikeforce during this time frame? He's been fighting, no problems, there's really been no injuries, he's just been fighting other companies in Japan and the Netherlands. So really, I mean, what is the problem here? My only thought could be that it's money. It's the only thing that really makes any sense at this point. If he's not injured, it sounds like just money, and that probably is going to come to pain him a lot more. And it sounds like he's really just kind of holding on to Strikeforce as his final option, or, if you will, the fat girl. So we're going to try and reach Scott Coker soon to get a response to the situation, so stay tuned for that in the coming weeks. But, I mean, is this really a right of Strikeforce to even hold on to his contract when he's not doing anything? Isn't there some kind of clause that says he must defend his title after a certain period of time? I know Shooto has that rule, where I believe it's 18 months if a fighter does not defend his title, he's automatically stripped of that belt. So it's been about 2 years. How come the title is still around Overeem's waist? Scott Coker, please let us know. All right, so with that, we're going to take a break. And when we return, John Anik will be joining us from ESPN's MMA Live show. So stay tuned. We'll be right back for that. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7. Or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Joining me now is the host of ESPN's MMA Live. That man will be John Anik. John, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, man. How you doing?
All right, thank you. Now, UFC 102 was this past weekend. I know you weren't there in person, but I know you did see the show, so... What are your thoughts on the show overall?
Well, I think you got to start with tonight's biggest winner, which was Rodrigo Nogueira. Really a dominant performance, and I never expected a fight like that to be so one-sided. And as much as we can admire Randy, I just thought it was a great night for Big Nog, and really proving that his critics really were assessing him on one bad performance, and the rest of his career has been pretty sharp. So. You know, it was a bad night with his chin against Frank Mir. He bounced back in a big way. I would have liked to see more between Mark Card and Maya. 21 seconds, I felt a little bit short game. Great night for Nate. And, nice bounce back win for Thiago Silva. And top to bottom, as you know, a great card and a nice comeback for the UFC after 101.
Yeah, definitely. Now, on topic of Thiago Silva versus Keith Jardine, where does Jardine go from here now?
Great question. You know, I mean, he didn't want to be called the gatekeeper coming in. Now he might be enough below the gatekeeper. And as said on MMA, we don't think that even about his ability or his talent. He has some great wins over big names like Liddell and Forrest Griffin and continues to move the needle and get big fights. But this one was sort of one that a lot of people thought he had to have, and a first round knockout
very dramatic setback. Now, also on the topic of Nate Marquardt and Damian Maia, you said you saw that fight also. My question for you is, who do you think is the actual number one contender for that middleweight title? Do you think it's Henderson, or is it Marquardt, who, as you said on the show before, has solved the Damian Maia equation?
It's amazing. I mean, it's so difficult to say, because you thought if Hendo could get that statement knockout of this thing, it was his title shot. And then, you know, we just thought Marquardt and I would be more competitive, so we were leaning towards Hendo. And now, I don't know if you have those two fight. It's really hard to pick somebody ahead of the other. So I would say, you know, maybe they'll have those two fight. And then eventually, so we'll move back down to 185 after another fight at 205 and then fight the winner of that clear number one contender.
So overall, how would you say the show was for you?
I thought it was great. I mean, you know, being in Philadelphia for 101, I thought the last two fights really saved the card. Great performance by DJ Penn and obviously what Anderson Silva did. But top to bottom, I just really thought it was underwhelming. And I thought going into Philadelphia, if there's one thing for Jim to do, it would be at least put two knockout artists on some point, you know, at some point during the prelims, and really get going. Because that's doing the crowd. I mean, they were amped up. They put in a full Philadelphia Eagles tailgate, and I just wish they would have gotten a better card. So 102, I thought, was everything that 101 wasn't. Great finishes across the board, a bunch of heavyweight, you know. So really a great night for Portland and a great night for the UFC.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed this also. Whenever it seems like the UFC comes to the East Coast, whether it be Jersey or now Philadelphia, it seems like the shows are generally lackluster, whereas on the West Coast they've got, like, you know, the really big main events. Even in Portland, you know, got a big main event, but the rest of the card is still overall not such a great card on paper. Is there a reason you think that the East Coast just still isn't really getting these big cards?
I think a lot of it's circumstantial. You know, I think you try to schedule guys who are East Coast fighters, whether they be Kenny Florian or Kirk Pellegrino, Ricardo Almeida has a gym in New Jersey. You know, so sometimes the focus isn't the totality of the card as much as it is featuring local guys, you know. But I would say going into 101, there were probably three or four fights that I was really looking forward to. And then going into 102, circumstantially, because of the matchups, there were probably seven fights I really wanted to see. So, you know, an injury for 101 a little bit. So, you know, it was what it was. But, no, I think it is more circumstantial. And I wouldn't necessarily think there's any East Coast, West Coast conspiracy to it, you know.
All right, hope not. And I also want to ask you a little about the history of yourself in broadcasting, because I really couldn't find too much information about that online. And you know, I wanted to pretty much get your story for a little. What got you into doing broadcast journalism?
Sure. I started doing an afternoon drive in Boston on the radio, which was a great thrill, what I always, you know, had wanted to do. And eventually we developed a relationship with ACO Pay-Per-View, and we started a mouthpiece box show. It was a boxing radio show that we did for about 4.5 years. It's actually still going on without me. Don't need me. But, so that was really what got me going on the combat. Eventually we took our boxing show to Elite XC's debut in 2007, really got hooked on mixed martial arts thereafter, and was working for ESPN Digital Media when the concept of MMA Live. And part of it was right place, right time. Part of it was the boxing background. And what a blessing, you know. It's a dream come true.
Now, you mentioned that Elite XC show, and that got you hooked onto mixed martial arts. What was it exactly that hooked you into mixed martial arts?
That's a great follow-up, and I should preface it by saying it wasn't the Elite XC dragons breathing fire in the arena that got me. It was really, you know, a performance by Tony Villaseñor against David Loazzo and then Javier Vazquez. Just they had a couple of fights on that card that, you know, didn't have Gina Carano. It was my first legit live MMA encounter. And, you know, I saw Charles Crazy Horse knock KJ Nunes in the next week, and I just, you know, it was a whole new world. I mean, I covered a lot of duds on the boxing beat. I mean, the main events were great, but there were just, I mean, the undercard would really, I think, sold me that you can go to, you know, a night of fights and get eight great fights.
Have you yourself actually ever trained in boxing or any sort of mixed martial arts stuff? I know you are new to MMA, but have you actually trained in boxing or anything like that before?
I took boxing lessons. I don't know if I'd call it training. And I do plan to eventually take Kenny up on an offer to go to the Floyd Martial Arts Center in Brookline, Mass. But no, I have not ruled those. And, you know, I'll probably take a kickboxing lesson here or there and try to. No, it is something that I want to do. Time right now makes it a little tough, but I shouldn't be making excuses when I'm talking about
All right, now, can you tell us a little about the genesis of ESPN MMA Live TV show?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really at its core a news and information show. Our coordinating producer, Kieran Portley, was his baby. It was his idea. And he just knew there'd be a market for it. He knew the sport lived on the Internet, and that would be a good starting point. I think the way to approach it also with ESPN was to bring news and information before the live fight, because we all know about some of the various live fights. And when you have an uneducated mass, you know, you have to sort of, it has to grow on them a little bit. And understand it. They can't just see, you know, blood on the can, wonder what the deal is. So, but I think that, you know, the process is moving along, and I do think that ESPN certainly has its eyes wide open to MMA, and hopefully MMA Live is just a nice starting point when we're looking about 5 years from now.
It seems like it took ESPN a few years to actually want to start covering mixed martial arts. Do you know what the delay was with them?
Well, I think a lot of it is just people are uneducated, and there is a certain violence to the... Now, as someone who's boxing, you certainly know if you're at me the most dangerous sports in the world. I think football's one, boxing two, and hockey might be three, and MMA is down there. But, you know, perception becomes reality, and you know, it can be brutal with some of the blood and some knockouts. And I just think that for some people it's an acquired taste, but I feel like it becomes very addicting. My girlfriend came up with this stuff, and she's not a fan at all, couldn't tell you who Dave Ortiz is. So I just think it's about educating the people that aren't educated, and I also think when the generation turns over, this nice fan base is going to be so rabid that ESPN will have no choice. I mean, you know, ratings are ratings.
And MMA is definitely becoming much more in the mainstream these days. Being on the inside of it like you are, what do you think is going to be the next step with mainstream mixed martial arts?
Well, I think it's MMA on network TV, regardless of which promotion it is. I think that's a huge step, and the exposure and getting MMA in people's homes. You know, the one thing with the Bellator Fighting Championships, part of the premise is live mixed martial arts into a given family's home for straight weeks. I mean, how do you beat that? You talk about building stars and building names. People know they tune in for a three-month tournament. You're going to see a lot of fighters beat three times, and that's how you build stars, and that's how you get people interested. So I think it's just more live MMA into as many homes as possible.
Sorry, and of course you were also the English commentator for the Bellator Fighting Championship show, but we're going to ask about that in a little bit. I actually wanted to ask about your relationship with Kenny Florian. You guys seem to have a very good chemistry on the set. Did that just come naturally between you guys?
He's great. You know, I mean, as you know, in life sometimes you just hit it off with people. You know, we're both Austin, and it just really clicked pretty early. I certainly consider him more a friend, you know, than a colleague. And it's just being able to sit there at ESPN and watch 102 with him. You know, I've known him now almost 2 years, I guess, but they had never watched a card with him. You know, even when we're doing the live remote, you know, I'm stuck up on the set and they send Florian and Mir down to the octagon. So being able to watch the entire card with him and pick up on his insight was great. And as you know, he's just so accommodating and tells it like it is. And he's probably the best ambassador for the sport, really, of any fighter in the UFC. So I feel very privileged to, you know, have the seat that I do next to him.
He's a very cool guy. Do you have any fun stories about Ken Flo that have happened off the set?
Gosh, there's so many. I think really it comes down to ganging up on McNeil. You know, I grew up identical twin when we had a younger brother, and McNeil gets it pretty good, you know. But, you know, Kenny definitely provides some insight and stuff about that yeah, you just don't hear, and it's having the access. I mean, that's the thing I really feel so privileged, the access I have to so many UFC fighters, you know, on a weekly basis.
Now, who else has guest hosted the show with you? I know Ken Flo is usually there and Franklin McNeil. I saw you had Rashad Evans 2 weeks ago. Who else has kind of come on the show every now and then?
Yeah, Rashad's had a pretty good presence of late. He's hysterical. Rich Franklin has been in there. Frank Mir. Pat Miletich. Del Torres, of course. Miguel is just, I mean, talk about talent like it is. That guy's one of a kind. You know, it's been a who's. We've reached out to other non-US fighters as well. In case people are wondering, I mean, Gina Carano's been in there, and I expect there to be a nice versatile display going forward, but it's Ken Flo's seat if he wants it, you know.
Are there any new features you guys might be doing on MMA Live coming up this upcoming season?
I think we'll continue to work in things things like MMA for Dummies and the MMA training table, you know, whether it's in a kitchen or in a gym. So I know one of the biggest requests we get is to try and feature some of the gyms, you know, to go to a Team Quest or to go to Stidyatong in Boston, to travel all around and try and do some on from Extreme Couture or wherever. I think that'd be an interesting, of course, that, you know, takes resources like anything else, but that's something I'd like to see us do, and, you know, hopefully, you know, I mean, my dream is to do it twice a week because there's certainly enough information. I think that I continue to cover pay-per-views like we've been doing with weigh-in specials and ideally pre- and post-fight shows. I mean, I think we'll only add content at ESPN.com. We're not taking away, that's for sure.
All right, now, I'm curious about how involved you are in the actual process of the creation of the show. Are you there from start to finish, working on the script and getting everything ready for the actual production of the show?
Yeah, I mean, I get a rundown that we go over in a production meeting with the producers, and, you know, I essentially type the show and write the show, but I have a great team and a lot of direction, and I devote about 2.5 days to it, and, you know, the chat is part of that. Of course, I'd love to be dedicating 5 days a week to MMA, because it deserves that, especially for me at the end. But yeah, no, I'm a very much a big part of the process. I'm just not a prompter reader, that's for sure.
All right. Now, you mentioned before you are the English commentator on Bellator Fighting Championship, which is also on ESPN. What were your thoughts on Season 1 overall? Did you expect all the guys who won the tournament to be the winners?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you say a mild surprise at featherweight with Joe Soto, but he certainly had the potential to do it. I thought, you know, it played out, at least in terms of the champions, the way they drew it up. There was the Obi Yamada inverse triangle. Of course, that was the of the tournament. And Jorge Masvidal, and then that man. But we really, I mean, it was an unbelievable season. There were some unbelievable moments. I mean, even if this wasn't a national and international MMA promotion, some of the fights and finishes that we had, if they were even at a local level, would have gotten this type of exposure. So it was just a great way for Bellator to get itself out there. There were very few injuries, actually none in the tournament that affected or compromised the tournament. And you know, it's just they don't, you know, cut costs. I mean, they pay the fighters, they take care of the fighters. They have a full television production team. I mean, they blew it out for Season 1, and I know we're all eagerly waiting an announcement on Season 2, and then certainly I hope to be a part of it.
Have you heard any word about Season 2?
There should be an announcement soon, my friend, you know.
All right, that's good to know.
By the time, you know, we're talking next week or in 2 weeks, there's something out there, so we'll see.
Okay, now back to Bellator Season 1, just trying to get some hints about Season 2 coming out. For Season 1, were you kind of surprised at how much exposure it did get? I mean, and the fact that the whole format worked, this tournament-style format, since it was basically 12 back-to-back weeks of tapings, and were you surprised that this format actually worked? They were able to keep these fighters going with no injuries and that kind of stuff?
Well, certainly if you had had a major injury, that could have compromised part of the tournament. But, you know, Bjorn Redney, the CEO, and his team, matchmaker Matt Stanford, the COO of Matt Epstein, they thought about everything. I mean, I really think they did 90% of things right, and that's so hard to do in the first year as you're sort of learning on the job. The matchups were great. They built in, you know, some fail-safes so that they didn't, you know, if they lost the fighter, they had 5 weeks or 6 weeks to get him healthy over the course of 12 weeks, and only had one venue issue that they quickly resolved and moved the Montreal card to Monroe, Louisiana. The fighters raved about the way they were treated. I think what impressed me, just, you know, Bjorn Redney, especially off the top, impressed me. And then just that it was organized for a first-year operation. It was organized. And I'm just very excited to see, you know, where it goes from here.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Elite XC was one of your first live shows to go to. What other shows have you actually seen in person since you started covering mixed martial arts?
I went to the Prudential and saw Kimbo Slice, and then it's been, you know, the 12 Bellator shows, and then several UFCs in Minneapolis for UFC 87, and then MMA live shows in Vegas for 91, 94, 100. We were in Philly for 101. So yeah, it's been a lot. I mean, I will say, you know, calling fight stage side, I can't think of a greater thrill. And then of course, when the MMA live shows, interviewing Hoyce Gracie. I mean, if you think I thought I was going to be interviewing Hoyce Gracie, UFC 100, you know, it was really neat, and just really neat to see all these fighters interact. I really should have a Facebook group on.
Meeting all these big-name fighters, are you ever intimidated to talk to these guys?
Not really, you know. I mean, I was a little humbled when they made me stand on a stool, you know, with Brock Lesnar. You know, when I interviewed him, they had me on a stool. That was humbling. But, you know, I mean, I covered the Boston Celtics and the Boston teams, and we know what that market's about. And, you know, I think it comes with the territory, you know, and Brock is an angel. And he, you know, he doesn't even need to shake your hand. He just puts it out there, and it squeezes your hand, you know. So it's been great, but I'm not intimidated. It's fun.
And as a fan, what is your ultimate dream fight that you would like to see one day?
Oh, gosh. That is... Well, you know, I'm so close to Kenny, and I'm going to take... But I do want to see Kenny Diego Sanchez at some point. You know, GSP Anderson Silva, it seems like it's not going to happen. You know, I think Brock Fedor or Anderson Silva, Brock almost has more of a chance of happening than Anderson right now. So for a while, the answer was always St. Pierre and Silva. I guess right now, I'll say Brock Lesnar and Fedor.
All right, and of course, Fedor is now in Strikeforce, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this for many weeks on the show. But what do you think about Fedor joining up with Strikeforce and this whole M1 collaboration? Is this going to work in the long run?
Well, I don't know about the long run, but I think it'll certainly work in the short term. I think Scott Coker made a smart stroke in getting Fedor, and I think Showtime will certainly benefit from his. Got a win as well, and I love the matchup. I mean, that's the thing about Scott Coker, too, is sort of the only name I hear as a match picker, Strikeforce. This is the matchup that he needed to put on, is Brett Rogers and Fedor. I think it's so important, instead of giving him someone like Fabricio Werdum, who most of us, I don't really think, would beat Fedor, even though he has an experience edge over Brett Rogers, give him the big, undefeated, 5-inch, 265 heavyweight, that is Strikeforce's equivalent to Shane Carwin challenging Brock Lesnar, you know, and I think that move, because to me, a win over Brett Rogers does mean something. I know a lot of people criticize it. To me, that means something right now. That one's beat that guy. He's got a lot of power and size. He's serious about the sport. So, you know, I'm excited. I just don't know how long-term it will be. And I will say, too, just adding on the Brock Fedor stuff, I do think Brock would beat Fedor, and that's why that fight is exciting to me, because no one has beaten that guy.
I'm going to quote you on that one. All right, now, I also wanted to know, this is something I've actually talked on the show over the past few weeks, in fact, is about Fedor's marketability. Here we have a fighter who's a foreigner, he's from Russia, doesn't really speak English at all, and Strikeforce is pushing him as our main event. How marketable do you think Fedor actually is, even now, in mixed martial arts?
I think he's a nice piece for Strikeforce and Showtime, but I don't know about building an organization around him, because he just doesn't seem really to have the desire to help them in that thought, to help them market him or to improve his language or to even utter a sentence in English. You really don't know what drives this guy at all, and it seems like he likes it that way. You know, Anderson Silva is another guy who I would like to see more. You know, you see how charismatic he can be, and his English is better than he lets on. But I think Anderson Silva could do more as well. So is Fedor a guy you can build around long term? I wouldn't say he is, but I think he's a nice piece, and you know, hopefully he gets the memo that he needs to get himself out there even more than he has.
So with this acquisition of Fedor, now with Chris Cyborg being the women's champion, where do you think Strikeforce is going to stand in a year from now, since Dana White has pretty much declared all-out war on Strikeforce?
Well, again, you know, I don't know that anyone's going to ever be able to really compete with the UFC. I think they coexist, promotions like Strikeforce and like Bellator and others. But to ever reach that level, I mean, that is ambitious when you talk about head start that the UFC has and how brilliant it is and everything that they've done. You know, so do I think Strikeforce will be around? Absolutely. But I don't know that it's going to be any more prevalent than it is right now.
All right, now, outside the ring and outside of MMA, what does John Anik do in his spare time?
I spend time with my significant other. I do watch some sports. I try to run, so my face doesn't look bad on TV. I play tennis. I lift weights, but not a lot of them. You know, I'm very much a regular guy. I enjoy sport, but really, MMA is just, it's taken a little bit of the baseball fan out of me, which is something I never thought I would say. But, you know, when you compare the pace of MMA to baseball, you know, after watching UFC 102, I have a time sitting down and watching Fred. So, but regular guy.
Well, that makes one of us at least, and it's not me. All right, now, for viewers who don't know how to check out MMA Live, how can someone go and see that show?
I appreciate it, man. You can go to ESPN.com on the homepage. There's the video tab right at the top of the page. Just scan your mouse over it, and MMA Live's tab will show right up. New episode every Thursday at Eastern. Kenny Florian is there this week, and we'll be talking about 102 and a bunch of other stuff. So I appreciate the plug, man.
All right, now, also, I know when I usually have fighters on the show, I let them thank their sponsors, and since you are involved in the fight world, I don't know if you have any sponsors you want to thank, but if you want to thank anybody, any family members or whoever, go ahead right now if you'd like.
How about that? A chance to thank sponsors. I just want to plug MMA Live again at ESPN.com and tell people to stay tuned for an announcement on the Bellator Fighting Championship, and hopefully myself and Jason Sanders are back doing the play-by-play, and a lot of MMA content at ESPN.com. We're all on Twitter, so check it out, and I appreciate you coming on.
All right, John, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I'll check out the site. Appreciate the time.
All right, thank you. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox or a Yanks fan, you can't deny good designs. Check out bostonbrawler.com. And also by findmmagym.com. Looking for an MMA gym near you? Head to the best site to find your new place to train at findmmagym.com. And we are back, and you just heard from John Anik from ESPN's MMA Live. Good stuff, and if you haven't watched the show before, definitely check it out on ESPN.com. So that's going to wrap this show up for this week. Just want to thank my sponsors again. They are CageSideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. Next week, we're going to talk with Ultimate Fighter Season 10 contestant and IFL Heavyweight Champion, Big Country Roy Nelson. So make sure you come back for that. Also, big announcement that I've kind of forgot to mention over the last few weeks. Starting yesterday, September 1st, on the Fight Network, the Fight Nerd videos that you've seen on my website are going to start airing as part of their regular programming schedule. So check their website for more details and watch the station to see if you can spot the Fight Nerd. And of course, if you like what you see on that network, send them a message to tell them you want to see more of me. So, with all that, thanks for watching. Stay tuned this week to the website. We're going to begin putting up the Chris Weidman documentary. Chris is going to be fighting at the Abu Dhabi World Trials coming up September 26th in Barcelona, Spain. And we did a documentary with him for his first mixed martial arts fight back in February. So we're putting that up in pieces. First piece should be up the next day or two. So stay tuned to my website for that, as well as some other technique videos and a few more interviews from the New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo. This is The Fight Nerd. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you back here next week.